We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
It's time for the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. Get insight into your favorite West Virginia University teams and hear exclusive interviews. Now, let's go live inside our MSN studios. Here's your host of the Mountaineer Insider, Dan Zangrilli.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for being with us here on this edition of the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. It's brought to you in part by our friends at Coca-Cola as we get you ready for WVU and Texas Tech coming up at 5:30, 2 o'clock airtime on the Mountaineer Sports Network. Oh, by the way, as West Virginia plays game two here in this five-game stretch without a bye week, longest road trip of the year out to Lubbock. But West Virginia, 3-1, taking down the Kansas Jayhawks, 38-17, and feeling good about themselves, especially the way that they have performed defensively. After the Saturday win, WVU with the top-ranked defense in all the United States of America. So that has been, I guess, the buzz around the week. And really, all of the individual players on the defensive side of the ball, if you look at how they're grading out, Pro Football Focus has done a terrific job highlighting the high quality of play that we've been able to see with our eyes. But anecdotally, you can't quite put your finger on maybe why things are so good, but there's other instances where you can. It's blatantly obvious, like, you know, Akeem Mezidor bursting through with back-to-back sacks, or Josh Chandler Cimito flying around, or maybe Tyke Smith taking running backs and body slamming them onto the ground. So there are things that you can see. There are things that you really have to dive a little deeper to appreciate how good this defense actually is and how special they have been in this 3-1 start for the year. But this is a part of the year where it really starts to increase. Quality of opponent, number one, at least in succession. Texas Tech, yes, they are winless in Big 12 conference play. Yes, they have lost their last three games after barely squeaking by and winning their non-conference game. However, this is a team, and you'll hear this with our guest coming up in Don Williams, longtime Red Raiders beat writer for the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, that they are getting restless in Lubbock. And we'll dive into exactly why and what's going on there as far as the fan base is concerned, what their patience level is right now with second-year head coach Matt Wells, and just the overall situation going on in Lubbock. Also, what I want to do is take a little bit of a dive into the West Virginia defense, as I was just talking about here a second ago, and talk to one of the key contributors on it. No, it's not a Stills brother, as we spoke to Darius last week, and we've talked to Dante as well. We had Jeffrey Pooler on our press conference show on Tuesday, but Josh Chandler Cimito, who said on our post-game radio interview with Tony and Coach Wallace after the game immediately after defeating Kansas, that this team and this defense is greedy and they are gritty. That obviously turned into a great social media piece on the WVU football Twitter timeline. But nevertheless, you can hear, and I really enjoyed this conversation. I hope you will too. He is laser focused, and I'm talking all business. And it's just so encouraging to hear how locked in he is. Everything that you want. I'm not just talking on the practice field. I'm not just talking on game days. I'm not talking about in film room. I'm talking about 24/7. One of the questions that I asked him was, do you literally sleep with a football like tucked under your arm? Like you see on television sometimes, and you know, you depict these players that just were ball as life. They take the basketball to bed with them. They take the football to bed with them. As we were going through this interview, I had to ask that question, like, hey, man, you are really, really locked in. He's 24/7. He's making all the sacrifices off the field. He is really got things down to a science as far as the health, rest, recovery, nutrition, because that's what you need to do. And that's how you survive this gauntlet that is this five-game stretch that West Virginia has to go through. You have to absolutely positively adhere to your routine and to your plan. And that discipline that we have all had to really refine and implement in our lives in some way, shape, or form, you can just hear in the guy's voice that there is an opportunity before him, and he is going to ensure that this opportunity is not capitalized on. And the moment that he has before him, he is going to seize it in every way, shape, and form. And it's an interview that I really enjoy, just to be able to hear the conviction in a young man's voice, especially considering his circumstances growing up in Canton, Ohio, which he'll get into a little bit as well, to really appreciate where he's been, what he's come from, where he's at now, and where he plans to go. There are some players, right, that they are given or gifted opportunities, and they don't take advantage of them. They don't seize the moment. Everything that Josh Chandler Cimito at this juncture in his life and in football is doing, and you'll be able to hear it, it's abundant and clear as day. They don't do that. And those are the real sad stories, right? And listen, they're going to happen. Happy stories, successful stories, ones of setback, that they all happen, right, around college athletics. But this is the one that I am really feeling good about, and it's going to have a great, great ending, whatever that ending is going to be. And I don't think that ending, by the way, is going to be in the forefront at any point in time in the near future. So I digress. Without any further ado, we'll hear from Josh Chandler Cimito and Don Williams from the Lubbock Avalanche Journal as we talk to a West Virginia defender and we get the scoop on the Red Raiders. So stay with us. Thanks for being with us here on the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. We're back in a flash.
Today tastes like game day at home, like assigned couch seating. Tastes like coffee table dining. And an ice-cold Coke to cool down the heat. It tastes like the game you've waited for all week with friends you've known your whole life. Today, tastes like watching football is supposed to. And it never tasted this good. Coca-Cola. Together tastes better.
Welcome back to the Mountaineer Insider. As promised, Josh Chandler Cimito, Big 12 Defensive Player of the Week. I think I forgot to mention that in the opening segment. Apologies for that. West Virginia, of course, taking home the three awards, with KU and WVU being the only Big 12 game this past weekend. Lady Brown gets offensive honors. Hakeem Mezidor gets Newcomer of the Week honors. But Josh Chandler Cimito, right off the top, when I asked him about how, well, Big 12 Defensive Player of the Week sounds, he says, team award. Absolutely. And this team is clearly locked in, and as is Josh Chandler Cimito.
There's no way that my stat line looks how it looks, if our D line doesn't do what they do, if our back end doesn't hold up, if other linebackers basically don't do their job. So we all have to have a collective effort in order for all of us, in order to have an individual war like that, everybody on the defense has to succeed.
And I think that sort of bears out in the numbers when you see that West Virginia is leading the country in total defense. I'm sure you like that number far better than the Big 12 Player of the Week award, right?
Yeah, definitely do. It's been a lot of hard work put into that. We got to keep going. We got a big test ahead of us. And basically for the rest of the year, we've got to be able to come to the challenge every day. Every team we play, every offense we play, especially in the Big 12, with some of the best offenses in the country are going to see that number, and they're going to come after us. So we've got to hold our own.
Speaking of the challenge, I mean, this is one heck of a challenge. This is the second game in a stretch of five consecutive. Really nobody else in the league has to go through that. I assume you guys feel prepared and ready to take on that challenge, as daunting as it can be.
Oh, yes, we've definitely talked about it. We've discussed it. We have a pretty good plan. Coach Brown, a lot of coaches have set a good plan as far as rest and preparation and different things like that to make sure our bodies are fresh and that we're mentally on point to be able to handle the five-year stretch.
What are some of those things that he's doing to make sure that we can handle it in an appropriate fashion?
Basically, just keeping everything on a strict schedule, making it a routine. Like, no surprises. We know we have to do everything every single day. We know what the game plan is. We know exactly how he wants to do things. We know exactly how we want to do things as players and as coaches, as a full unit. Like, we know exactly what we have to do every single day. We know the amount of rest we need. We know the amount of recovery we need. That basically the thing is the film study is like, to keep our mental up and just different things like that.
How disciplined do you have to be to do everything that you sort of just mentioned? Because if you deviate even in the slightest from any of these practices and procedures here that have been laid out for you, you don't adhere to them, it could really throw the plan off, can't it?
Yeah, it definitely can. Like, you definitely have to be unselfish and think about the teammates, think about everybody else who's in a collective one. Maybe like, oh, I don't want to go as hard this player do. This is all for the collective, and it's for the betterment of everybody.
Our conversation with Josh Chandler-Cimito continues. Tell me how you've gotten better, how you've been able to grow from last year to this year. Obviously, you came onto the scene last year, and as the second half of the season in particular really progressed, you really did as well. Take me through the offseason. Take me through how you became a better football player to get to the product that we see right now on Saturdays.
Really just focusing on the smaller things, basically taking my game and then, like, just breaking it down, comparing it to other backers in the country, comparing it to NFL-style players, and basically just trying to progress, taking care of my body more, doing different things like that, working on aspects of my game that necessarily I didn't focus on or things that I've learned from other people. Hey, like, hey, work on this, it improves this and that. So basically just doing that, just trying to find all the holes in my game and improve them. And even things that I've done well in the past, on that.
Josh, who do you look up to, or maybe who do you model after? You mentioned that you're watching some guys in the league and seeing how they go about their business. Anybody in particular that you may find yourself drawing a comparison to, or maybe that your game is similar to, that you're sort of adhering some of those best practices?
Not really like a direct comparison, because I play more of like an outside linebacker, kind of like a linebacker safety mix.
Right.
But like the player that I like to watch a lot is Bobby Wagner. And not really like on the field. Like on the field, everybody knows what he represents, but really just like in real life, like how he carries himself, basically just representing yourself. Just like the way you handle things, like it's a difference between a college athlete and a professional athlete. And I'm really trying to understand that and get to that level and understand, like, what is different. Like, how do you treat certain things? How do you move in different aspects? How do you practice? How do you, like, live? Because ultimately, like, football is not just done on the practice field or in a facility. It's done in life. It's a lifestyle.
So tell me how you've adapted your lifestyle to the game of football. And like you mentioned, it's a 24/7 deal. It's not, you know, you're not punching a clock here, and you hang your hard hat up at the end of the day, you go home. I mean, you're on 24/7. At least the great ones are on 24/7 in everything that they do. Football is the at front of mind. So how have you changed your life and your lifestyle to make sure that everything is translating on the field so you get that tiny little razor-thin edge?
Basically, just limiting distractions, like all outside of distractions. Like if it's not really important, if it's not the betterment for me and the team, then I'm not really going to do too much in it. Like eating habits, of course, you know, making sure I put the right things in my body, taking care of my body, keeping my mental strong. Like without your mental, like you're really not going to be able to do much. Knocking school out early so that I can have more time to focus on football, focus on myself. Like I said earlier, my mental, studying the game, play recognition, just different things like that. More reps and practice. Those are the things that have been helping me out a lot.
You're living it, you're eating it, you're breathing it. Like, do you take the football, like, to bed with you? And do you, like, you know, hold the football? Do you sleep with the football? Like, there's some guys that are just so obsessed that they literally take the pigskin with them to bed. I mean, you're not quite there, are you?
No, I'm not quite there. But coming from where I'm from, there ain't really too many ways out and too many ways to be successful. And football has basically given me that avenue. So I'm not going to take it for granted. I'm going to try to get everything out the game I can, but I know you got to respect the game. You got to give everything to the game in order to get a lot back out of it. So that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, this opportunity is not lost on you. Tell me about your background and how it's been a vehicle and a path for you to be able to enjoy the prosperity that you've enjoyed and continue to enjoy.
I'm from Canton, Ohio. It's a small city. It's a football town, but it's not really the best area as far as living. It's a lot of violence and a lot of things like that. So I got a lot of people, like, at home that really depend on me and basically thrive off my every move. Like, a lot of people have been telling me, like, how I'm their motivation. But at the same time, I tell them back, like, they're the ones who fuel me. Like, without that motivation coming from home, it would just be me just playing ball. Like, of course, you can do things for yourself, but it means a lot more when you're able to do something to inspire, like, kids, inspire, like, a whole city, essentially.
Hmm. Yeah, you feel a pretty big responsibility, it seems. Josh Chandler Cimito is with us. So Josh, all business, right? You mentioned on the radio that we're getting greedy, right? And we're greedy and gritty. It turned into a social media video. But that's sort of the embodiment of where this defense is. That's how they're playing. And it seems like you have a big say in that, a big voice, and you're really setting the tone in that regard.
Yes, that's one thing we focused on after the Oklahoma State loss was basically just we got to find our identity and find our grit. Like, and that's one thing that we really harped on. Coach Brown initially pushed it, but we kind of, like, take it to a whole other level. Like I said in the interview, like, when the offense, when things aren't going good for the offense and we get more opportunity to go out there and make plays, like, we actually thrive in that. Like, we want to be on the field. We want to be able to make plays. It looks better for us. It's more stats. More plays on the field, like, that means we have a chance for everybody to eat, essentially. Like, everybody can get a chance, like how we did last game. Everybody, like, the stat numbers were crazy. But those are things that we really don't focus on. We focus on more, like, what did I grade out at? Like, how did I improve from my last game? How are we looking compared to the other top defenses? How are we looking compared to the other top teams? That's the next step that I feel like we're well on our way to taking in order to be an even better defense. Like, yeah, everything looks good now, but we haven't played the chunk of our schedule to where that really tells us if we're one of the best defenses in the country or not. Mm-hmm. So we just got to continue to prove, continue to keep improving and keep striving every day. Definitely can't get complacent because of the early accolades.
Really enjoyed that conversation with Josh, and I hope you did too. I enjoyed talking to Don Williams, one of the deans of beat writers in the Big 12 Conference. He has been covering the Red Raiders since 1986 in some way, shape, or form. He's been at the Avalanche Journal since 1988. So we've got 4 decades of experience here from a guy that has seen the good, the bad, and the ugly of what has gone on in Lubbock. And he's got his finger on the pulse as good as anybody. And right now, frankly, it's not very good. The situation that we have here in Morgantown is far different, despite Matt Wells and Neil Brown, both coming into the league at the same year, being second-year head coaches. The way that we have things going and the way that the program is heading and how we've embraced Neil Brown, at least according to Don, that is not going on right now in Lubbock, and they are getting restless, which was a bit of a surprise to me. I thought that there would be some more patience among the fan base, but you have to take things into context, I guess, what's happened over the last decade or so. But nevertheless, I don't want to spoil the interview. We'll get to all of that as we continue on with this edition of the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. They have a new quarterback under center, whole lot going on in Lubbock. What are the big matchups that we need to be looking for on Saturday at 5:30? We get into all of that and more with Don Williams of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal coming up next.
Today tastes like game day at home. Like assigned couch seating. Tastes like coffee table dining. And an ice cold Coke to cool down the heat. It tastes like the game you've waited for all week with friends you've known your whole life. Today tastes like watching football is supposed to. And it never tasted this good. Coca-Cola. Together tastes better.
Well, Don, it's another West Virginia trip out to Lubbock, Texas, and for whatever reason, things just have not gone the Red Raiders' way so far. Now, granted, their strength of schedule, one could certainly argue, far superior than West Virginia's, though the Mountaineers do have the one game against Oklahoma State, and that is a loss. But you have the overtime game against Texas. You've got a 10-point defeat to Kansas State, and then Iowa State looks better and better seemingly every week. So give me just quickly a snapshot of Texas Tech and where Matt Wells is in year number two, if you would.
Well, I think it's kind of a frustrating time for Matt Wells. It's really a frustrating time for Texas Tech fans, and fair to say that the natives are restless, so to speak, because, the real epitaph, I guess you could say, of Texas Tech's first season with Matt Wells was what could have been, because they finished 4-8 and they lost four games by 3 points or less. And that had not happened to a Texas Tech team since the Jerry Moore years in the early 1980s. You got to go way back. And now that same inability to finish games that they have seemingly in control has continued into the 2020 season. I mean, that was never more evident than in the Texas game where Sir Roderick Thompson breaks off a 75-yard touchdown, and with 3 minutes and 13 seconds left, you're leading 56-41, and somehow you find a way to lose that game in overtime. So that's a huge game that they let slip away. And then Kansas State, down 17-7. Then in the fourth quarter, they get it going. Find something in the running game, go ahead 21-17 with 11 minutes left in that game, and lose that one 31-21. And so the fans here have seen this happen so often since the beginning of last season that there's just no confidence that this team can win a football game. That no matter how things might look with 10 or 12 or 15 minutes left, no matter how good a position they might be in, everyone expects the worst. And the reason why is because the worst has happened so many times over the last year and, I guess, year and four games now.
So let me ask you this then. What makes people so restless? Because I would, just on the outside looking in, all right, guy in his second year, he's trying to build something. I don't know necessarily, and you could probably shed some light into this, Don, what the cupboard was like when Cliff Kingsbury left. So I guess, why all of the ire from the fan base for a guy in year number two that's trying to, I guess, build a program?
I'd say two or three things factor into that. One is the culmination of, mostly losing football. Tech fans still finally remember the days of Mike Leach when you were going to bowl games 10 years in a row and being nationally ranked. And those days are long gone, have been long gone. So Wells walked into a situation where people are already angry to begin with. Two, Texas Tech hired him from Utah State. His record at Utah State's 44-34, and he was there for 6 years, and the first two of those years were really good, and then he had three straight seasons that were not so good, and then they went 10-2 or 11-2 in his last year. But now people point back to, why did they hire a coach from the Mountain West Conference who had losing records in three of his previous four seasons? You know, he was not a very well-known name, you know, to the casual fan. Another factor that plays into it is it became public that, you know, some of the big money donors here with Texas Tech very much wanted Dana Holgorsen to return to the Red Raiders and thought they could make that happen. And Kirby Hoka didn't want Dana. He really was sold on Matt. And so, you know, anything to do with the Mike Leach program has a lot of appeal for Texas Tech fans, since Dana was an essential element to that. There are obviously a lot of folks who would have liked to have seen Dana be back here. So that's another factor that's played into it. And then when you're losing games, again, when you're losing close games that are up for grabs in the fourth quarter, then every decision that you make gets scrutinized dissected, and in a lot of cases vilified. And that's come into play, too. I mean, every coaching decision, you know, all these games that we talked about, the Tech has lost by a touchdown or less, 3 points or less, you can point, fans will point back to if you had just done this instead of that, they would have won that game. If you had just done that instead of this, they would have won this game. And so it's just been a culmination of factors. But, you know, bottom line is he's now, 5-11 through 16 games. And so so people aren't happy, although it's kind of curious. I didn't realize it until I went back and looked a week or so ago. You know, Matt Campbell at Iowa State is revered, I think, around the Big 12.
Absolutely.
I don't know how everybody's viewed in West Virginia, but I know, yeah, and Texas Tech people think, you know, Matt Campbell, what a fantastic coach. And through 16 games at Iowa State, Matt Campbell's record was 5-11, which is exactly the same as Matt Wells' record through 16 games at Texas Tech. So. We'll see.
Yeah, it's certainly working out in Ames, and I know Mountaineer fans hold Campbell in very high regard. Don Williams, who's our guest, Lubbock Avalanche Journal. Our conversation continues with him here on the Mountaineer Insider. So everything that you just said there, a win for Texas Tech means what? And dare I ask, a loss for Texas Tech means what?
A loss means more of the same, more... animus, hostility, what have you, venom directed at Matt Wells. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, fans now already are saying, you know, early in year two, how hot is Matt Wells' seat? If Matt Wells loses this Saturday, how much more is he on the hot seat? Or changes, you know, what changes are coming at the end of the season? It's, I mean, again, it's almost like a fait accompli that people feel like this is not going to change. This team is going to keep losing games. And then, you know, when they were 1-2, people were saying this team's going to finish 1-9. And can they fire the coach? Can they afford to fire the coach? So that's what it means if he loses. If he wins, I think maybe it quiets stuff a little bit, but I don't know that it. I don't know that a win over WVU, with all due respect, would have meant the same as a win over Texas for all of Texas' failings and underachievement. Had they finished that game off, that I think would have done a whole lot to kind of calm people around here. I think there's still some skepticism with the Mountaineers, and you know, obviously no disrespect to Neil and the guys, who I hold in high regard and think very highly of Neil Brown for his days here. But I think there's still some kind of people are kind of trying to figure out, is West Virginia for real? Went over having beaten Kansas and Baylor. Is Baylor as good as last year? As last year, with all the talent that they've graduated. I don't know that people certainly want to see him win. I don't know, but he needs to keep winning. He needs to keep winning more games beyond that to kind of get himself out of the fire here.
Yeah, all good points and fair points here. So having said all of that, setting the table for a backup quarterback to take over for Alan Bowman, who has not performed well. Henry Columbia is going to get the start, a Utah State transfer, mind you. Give us the book on him and where are fans at with Columbia. Typically, the backup quarterback is the most popular guy in the room, particularly when things are not going well in the midst of a three-game losing streak. So is he still the most popular guy in the room, and are fans excited for him getting the opportunity Saturday, or is it maybe more of the same? They're just throwing their hands up in the air, Don.
You kind of nailed it. That's where they are with Henry Columbia. The fans need somebody to give them hope, and Henry Columbia has given them hope because Alan, he went down with an ankle injury on the second series at Kansas State. Henry came in. He wasn't fantastic, but he was. He did a good job under the circumstances, threw for about 240 yards and a couple of touchdowns. And the thing that people like about Henry Columbia is he's a guy who has mobility. And if he doesn't see an open receiver, he is not afraid to tuck it and run and go get 8 or 10 or 12 yards. He's not, I don't know if he's a dangerous runner, but he's the kind of guy that if it's on 3rd and 7 and he doesn't have a guy open, he can tuck it and kind of break your heart and go run it for 8 or 9 yards and move the chains. The other thing I think will be interesting to see with Henry Columbia is now that he gets an extended chance, can he continue to be as accurate a passer as he has been over the course of his career? Now, Saturday is the first game as he has started, but it will be the 16th college game that he has played in, because in his 2 years at Utah State, when he's backing up Jordan Love, he played in 13 games. So he's not a guy who has never seen college football. He's got a lot of experience in college football. And the interesting thing is for his career, he is 93 out of a 123, which is about 76% completion rate.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. It's fantastic. So obviously he can't continue to complete passes at the rate of 76%, but certainly there's a body of work there over a lot of appearances in games that says if you get a guy open, Henry Columbia can put it in his hands. And so it'll be interesting to see if he can maintain that accuracy level. But I'm kind of rambling here, though, but to go back to your original question, yes, folks have been very eager to see him. They've been put out with Alan Bowman really since the season started, and folks have been calling for Henry Columbia for 2 or 3 weeks now. And Matt Wells kind of gave them their wish last week when he announced that he's going to change quarterbacks.
Yeah, and made that announcement fairly early in the whole deal. Don, what is the strongest strength here for Kansas or for Texas Tech, to beg your pardon? Are we talking about its offensive line? I'm looking at the number where, you know, they've yielded only 3 sacks through the first 4 games. West Virginia's defensive line is very formidable, obviously, with the Stills brothers and many other characters that are on that D-line. So they're very deep there. So that's a potential matchup that we'll be looking at. But I guess, you know, for a 1-3 team, where do they hang their hat at day's end?
Well, You know, that's a good question, because I don't know that there's a slam dunk answer. I think I can give you several different possibilities. You know, you touched on one of the great matchups on Saturday, which is Texas only allowed 3 sacks in 4 games, and WVU has 16 sacks in 4 games. So which team prevails there? And Tech Mats on admission, the quarterbacks get the ball out so quickly that and one of the reasons they benched Bowman was they felt like he went through his progressions too quickly and was too quick just to check down to the running back. And so by their own admission, that's part of the reason why they've given up so few sacks is they haven't had the pass protect for very long in a lot of instances. And, you know, they're starting 2 newcomers at tackle, lost 2 long-term tackle starters last year. One of them is after last season, one of them is now starting for the Dallas Cowboys. So Tech offensive line has been okay so far, but still needs to prove itself. So Roderick Thompson, their running back, has had a couple of 100-yard games. I really think that their defensive front 7 has some good individual talent, although they're still kind of playing B-12 defense and giving up too many points. But they brought in some transfers at linebacker, Colin Schooler from Arizona, who is, he and Tony Fields were 1-2 in tackles at U of A last year. Schooler's new year. They brought in a transfer from Duke named Jacob Morgenstern, who looks really impressive, and outside linebacker who's 6'4 and 220. They brought in they signed a kid from a JUCO in Kansas that led the NJCAA in tackles last year, named Krishan Merriweather. He's starting for them at middle linebacker, and I believe he's 3rd in the Big 12 now in tackles. And so I think their linebacker core has some pretty good pieces there. Another linebacker from Michigan State named Brandon Bouye Randall, who's a grad transfer. He's been good in pass coverage. So I'm not sure that – and, of course, the wide receivers, they have solid receivers, kind of like Texas Tech is known for. So I'm not sure exactly, though, which one is I would call their strength, because none of them have been great or prolific. They've all been kind of solid. But I guess that would be my analysis.
Yep. No, it's good. I asked that question because nothing particularly jumps off the page at me, whereas West Virginia, I think you look at their defensive line, well, their defense, I guess, as a whole, but Texas Tech, I think they're still sort of finding their way, and I guess from a Mountaineer fan's perspective, they're hoping that they don't find their way on Saturday evening at Lubbock Don. Look forward to the matchup. It's always been a fun one, these two teams, going back to 2012, obviously, when Neil Brown was the OC there. They really that set the tone for what has been a pretty good series, and we look forward to that continuing coming up on Saturday, and we look forward to catching up with you here down the stretch, Don, as we get into basketball season here, hopefully without any hitches as well.
Yeah, same here. I've always enjoyed my visits up to Morgantown, so hopefully we'll get a chance to do that again next year if we can get this pandemic to subside.
Well, Don, we certainly have enjoyed the conversation. We appreciate you. And, yes, I indeed concur to exactly what you just said. Let's get this thing in the rearview mirror, and we hope to be at United Supermarkets Arena for hoops before too long. We hope to have you back here at the WVU Coliseum. But until then, it's West Virginia going to Jones AT&T Stadium in Lubbock for the 5:30 blast-off on MSN Radio. That means we'll be on the air at 2 o'clock, 3.5 hours before the ball goes up is when we take the air with the longest, with the most comprehensive pregame coverage that you can find on the radio. Hosts closest to the scene live at the team. Wait, no. It's closest to the team live at the scene. That's how it goes. Yes, we've got our finger on the pulse. We're on the planes. We're in the booth. We're in the locker room. Still, no matter what, giving you the best coverage that anybody can give you as it pertains to WVU on the radio. So join us for a commercial-free first half hour at 2 o'clock as West Virginia does battle against Texas Tech and the Mountaineers look to go to 3-1 in league play and 4-1 overall. Hey, oh, by the way, West Virginia coach Neil Brown A win will put him over 500 through 17 games. He's 8-8 right now. Just figured I'd throw that little tidbit out there. So enjoy the rest of the week, what's left of it, and be sure to see us on the radio on Saturday at 2 o'clock right here on MSN, the Mountaineers Sports Network.
You've been listening to the Mountaineer Insider here on the Mountaineer Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. And be sure to find the latest news and information on the Mountaineers at WVUSports.com. The following has been a presentation of Learfield IMG College.